Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Sure, Eamon, you're not really a ga man, are you? So you won't have any...
I'm just intrigued by the cause and effect thesis. If I don't go to Barakabam at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, that's it.
That's career it. Doomed. Career doomed, yes. And so many people stick rigidly to those things. Oh, God. It's all part of the fun and games. Anyway, how are you?
I'm great. I'm very good indeed.
Yeah. You're surviving the heat.
Surviving the heat. As I was saying to you off air, we're just back from our the Kerry Dasnall pilgrimage to Lourdes the week before last. Great time. Great time was had by all.
And you were telling me on the phone when we were chatting yesterday, you were full of praise for the young people.
Oh, yeah. There's the helpers, most of whom are, so they'd be 50 years TYs. We have some older helpers as well too, but a lot of them are youngsters. And they're just amazing. They really are. They do have a bit of crack, but they work bloody hard. They're at it for 5 days, and it's been the same comment we've made year after year after year. These are really brilliant kids, and they're a credit.
Yeah, to their parents. Well done to them. And if there's any of them listening, Eamon was very impressed with you.
I was.
Anyway, on to medical matters, and a reminder that Eamon will take your general queries this week, and we'll start with this one. This, Eamon, is from a man in his 70s. He's asking, what's the cause of arthritis of the temporal artery?
Oh, yeah.
How serious is it, and can it be cured?
That's a very good question. Now, the interesting, let's start with a bit of phraseology. So the word is arteritis. So A-R-T-H-A-R-T-H-R-I-T-I-S is where you get an inflammation of the joint. It's an A-R-T-E-R-I-T-I-S. And the difference is it's an inflammation of a particular blood vessel. In this case, it's a thing called the temporal artery. Now, our temples are the two sides of our head, and the temporal artery is an artery that runs up along the outside there. The significance of it is that there's a branch of the artery, which is the central retinal artery. It's the a blood vessel that supplies the blood to our eyes, specifically to the back of the eye, the part of the eye called the retina, which is the critical bit that converts the light that comes into our eyes into an electrical signal, which our brain then interprets as light. Temporal arteritis is one of these so-called autoimmune disorders. It's a condition where the body's immune system goes wonky, and for some reason this blood vessel becomes inflamed. Now, you can get blood vessels inflamed in other parts of the body and may not be so critical, but this is a very critical part of the body. And the huge concern, and sadly I've seen it happening once or twice over the years, is that you get an inflammation of this artery, which then causes the artery to clot over, and more disastrously it'll cause the blood supply to the retina to be cut off, and unfortunately the individual then ends up with a rapid and irreversible blindness in the eye. I mean, irreversible, because once those cells at the back of the eye, the retina, die off, they don't grow back. So the person is left permanently blind in that eye. So if somebody has a throbbing, uncomfortable sensation in their artery, in their temples, it's important to get it checked out. It tends to affect older people. It can occur at any age, but it tends to affect older people. And if you do have a throbbing or an uncomfortable sensation, especially if you, the classic symptoms, you can actually feel kind of a painful, what we call cord, you can actually feel a bit of tissue on the side of your temple. If that is sore and uncomfortable, you need to urgently see a doctor about that. You need to see your GP. The reason being that we would do one simple blood test, which we can do in our own surgeries for the most part, and then get you started on steroids, because steroids in this case are sight saving. The person may or may not suffer a loss of, may not die from this thing, but one of the most disastrous things that can happen is for the person to suddenly lose their vision. And so in this situation, you give the person the appropriate treatment. Now, after that, there are further investigations required, but the message for today, if somebody has any concerns about this, they need to urgently see their doctor.
Now we'll move on to another one. A caller's father has a chronic itch on his back for the last 2 years. Very debilitating, affecting his quality of life, his sleep. It's on both sides of his back, around the shoulder blades and down his back. He has decreased kidney function and heart failure. He's tried different creams, lotions, and has attended different consultants, dermatologists, alternative therapies. with no relief.
Yeah, and there's a number of things that are going on there. Firstly, there are individuals who can get unpleasant, uncomfortable itch for no obvious reason at all. There are then individuals who can run into problems because of underlying health issues, specifically with either the liver or the kidneys. The issue with the liver and the kidneys is that, amongst other things, they act to filter poisons out of our system. And if they're not working properly, you can get a build-up of certain poisons. In the case of the kidneys, you can get a build-up of urea in the body. And this and creatinine, and these two can cause irritation of nerve endings. And then finally, because he also has heart failure and because he's got kidney problems, he's taking lots of medications, and it may well be a side effect of the medication. The quick answer is I don't have an answer. My own view about this is that I would refer to a consultant dermatologist who will do skin biopsies, who will take samples of tissues to try and find out what it is. It may very well be that this falls into the category of what we term the chronic pain syndromes. Now, it's not a pain in this case, it's an itch. But the overlap is that the problem is due to an activity within the nerve endings in the skin, which then register in the brain as the terrible itch, and you may have to use medications which block that signal getting to the brain. Again, a consultant dermatologist would be the best person to advise you about that.
Now, we have a lady in her 60s, and this question is quite topical given the heat wave. She says, with the heat wave, she's getting a lot of fluid retention in her ankles and general discomfort in her feet. And she's looking for advice.
And there was no quick and easy advice about this one. I think the one, and she'll know who she is when she hears me advising, saying about this, but I had a patient into me yesterday, God bless her, the poor creature, she said, I was a devil for the salt. And that's the problem. And that can be a problem because salt is notoriously fluid retaining. So one of the things, but from a general health point of view, I'd be encouraging people to reduce their salt intake anywhere. Now, of course, straight away, I'd be saying, if you're doing a lot of sweating, you're going to have to replace salt you're losing through your skin. But the advice is add it when cooking, but not at the table, try and avoid it. Other than that, the difficulty is that the impact of the heat is notorious for causing sluggishness of circulation in the peripheries, and particularly for older people, you can get this unpleasant swelling of the feet. Unfortunately, there's no quick and easy answer to it. I would strongly advise not using a diuretic, not using a medication to try to drain off excess fluid, because that just dehydrates other parts of your body. We're not really addressing the problem in your ankles. A simple solution done, maybe not the most practical one for some people, is literally just elevate the legs. If you have the time, if you can, try and get into bed for a while, especially in the heat of the afternoon. Get the legs open, a pillow, just rise them up a small bit, and that will have a great effect. That'll just literally drain the fluid out of your legs and you'll feel a lot more comfortable. The problem tends to be at the end of the day when the legs get really swelled and they get really uncomfortable.
Yeah, good excuse for a nap. I have to put my feet up.
Absolutely. Literally.
Literally put my feet up. Now, what have we next? Oh, yes. 70-year-old caller, female, says, how long do you have to wait to drive after having a hysterectomy?
The quick answer is you probably need to speak to the surgeon. It depends, though, on what kind of a hysterectomy you've had. So there are two kinds of a hysterectomy. There's a so-called vaginal hysterectomy and then the abdominal hysterectomy. The abdominal hysterectomy is where the surgeon will go in through the tummy and remove the womb there. The more common operation is so-called vaginal hysterectomy, where in procedure, the vagina is removed through the vagina. The difference between the two is that while you end up the same result, you remove the womb, and that's the purpose of hysterectomy. With the vaginal hysterectomy, it's still invasive, still very invasive, but you're not left with an abdominal scar. And the problem with the abdominal scars are that the concern is that if you're driving and if you were to come to a sudden halt, the safety belt might burst open your wound. And that's one of the concerns the surgeons have. The best thing to do is talk to your own surgeon about that, or the gynecologist who carried out the procedure. I would say my sense it would be a matter of weeks rather than months.
Okay, weeks rather than months. 41-year-old man had major surgery about 20 years ago after breaking his kneecap. He currently has a bar holding his bone together. And in the past 6 months, he has tried lifting his leg but can't reach his ankle without pain.
Yeah.
And sitting down Sitting down, I can reach my foot, he says.
The difficulty, I suspect, here, but okay, the problem is that the previous history of injury and surgery unfortunately points to current problems. The difficulty is that damage to joints earlier in life can lead to difficulty with the joints later in life. This is the case where the area that's affected needs to be appropriately imaged. Now, imaging could be a plain X-ray, it could be a CT scan. MRIs might not be possible depending on the type of metal that's in the joint. Bear in mind that the problem with the MRI is that the magnetic part of the MRI will heat up metal parts in your body, and that can cause an internal burning, so you don't want to go there. One way or the other, my sense is that if this is an ongoing issue, you're going to have to talk to your own GP. You'll probably need to see an orthopaedic surgeon again to have this further assessed and treated.
Caller wants you to explain what is lymphedema and what causes it.
Okay. Lymphedema is the condition where lymph fluid accumulates in certain parts of the body. Now, excuse me, around our body, our blood vessels are not absolutely watertight, and the fluid that carries the blood cells around, the stuff we call plasma, can sometimes ooze out, or sorry, sometimes always oozes out between the cells of the blood vessel walls, and this can cause an accumulation, a certain amount of fluid to be present throughout the body. There are channels, not as clearly defined as veins, but there are channels called the lymph channels that direct or bring this fluid back from our peripheries, our hands, our feet especially, back into our body to be recirculated. If something interferes with this return of fluid, so I'll give you a classic example. For individuals who have had radiotherapy, they can suffer damage to these lymph channels so that they don't work as effectively, and you'll find that people can get swelling of a limb as a result of this. But you can also find it in individuals, sometimes for no obvious reason. It's often related to illness or some underlying medical condition, but it sometimes happens of its own accord. And the problem is that the person gets a permanently swollen limb, typically the legs. And the difference is if we were talking a few minutes ago about somebody who was commenting on the fact that their feet get swollen in the heat, if you gently but firmly press on, let's say, the back of the foot or something like that, you'll see a dimple where you press in the person who gets swelling of the leg due to heat. With the person with lymphedema, the tissue becomes much more suffused. In other words, when you're pressing it, it just stays like that. The treatment is ever is trying to work out, if it's possible, what's the underlying cause of the issue, take that problem away. The difficulty is that in many cases, the underlying cause may be due to injury or illness that may not be correctable. In that case, then there are a variety of physical techniques to literally try to massage this excess fluid out of the limb.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it there for now, though, and take a short break. Lots of questions coming in for Eamon. And if you'd like to throw yours into the pot, we would be delighted to help you. 083 300 3300. And remember, if you prefer to phone Brenda, she'll take down your query. 066 712 3666.
Medical Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee. Celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now, if by any chance you've only just tuned in, you're very welcome. We're in the middle of Medical Matters with Dr. Eamon Shanahan. Excuse me. He's taking general queries today, so do send yours in. Next up, Eamon, a caller's husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's, but so far he doesn't have a lot of symptoms. He is taking the medication. He's very active. He's a good quality of life. And she's wondering, could you talk a little bit about Parkinson's and what they can expect going forward?
Yeah, I suppose the issue is that while Parkinson's can be progressive, it varies from individual to individual. I certainly know of a patient of mine years ago, and while in her later years, but she was a great age, she developed quite marked symptoms of Parkinson's. She had probably 2 decades of really good quality of life with no real symptoms of any sort. The problem with Parkinson's is that for reasons that aren't clearly understood, we lose a substance called dopamine from a part of the base of the brain called the substantia nigra, which acts to coordinate movement. And as a colleague of mine, or a retired colleague of mine, said, Parkinson's is a disease of smallness. It's small writing, small talking, small walking. So the classic picture you see with Parkinson's is that the person, excuse me, has what they call a fascinating gait, that their steps are very small, their writing becomes very tiny, their speech tends to fall away to nothing. And the thing is that the medication that's used is to try to slow the progression of the disease. Now, there's a lot of other therapies that can be used, particularly physiotherapy and physical therapy. This colleague of mine said that his way of dealing with this was that he deliberately made his writing very big. He deliberately took big steps. He deliberately spoke with good volume to his voice. So he wasn't going to let the disease define him. I'm sorry, I'm just distracted for 1 second by Billy Colony, who said, "Affect Parkinson anyway. Why couldn't he keep his disease to himself?"
Whoever Mr. Parkinson was.
Anyway, going back to the serious point, I'm delighted to hear that there hasn't been much sign of the disease at the moment. I think that this is something that I would immediately defer to our consultant neurology colleagues, and in their best judgment, they'll decide what is the most appropriate treatment for the individual. The idea is, as much as possible, is to slow the progression of a disease which probably is progressive, but progresses at different rates in different people's.
So it sounds like he's doing all the right things.
Yes.
And he's got a great attitude. He's enjoying
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. And that's the best thing you can
and
do.
And that's the best
thing
to
you
do.
Can do. Absolutely.
And I presume as well, like with any condition, that you know, exercise and good diet
and all of that. And to be fair, there's Parkinson's Society who will give lots of practical advice and tell you where you can make contact with various resources to help, because Parkinson's is not a rare disease.
Oh, is it not?
No. Yeah.
Okay, we're back to swollen ankles again, Eamon. Caller says, my father has a saline salt machine on at night for COPD. He's subsequently has swollen ankles for the last few months.
Yeah.
Is this causing the swollen ankles?
That's a good question. There's a fair point there, because if you flatten out the tiny little alveoli, as they call them, inside in the lungs, the surface area of the lungs is something like the size of a tennis court. There's a vast area inside there, so anything that you inhale will go straight into circulation. Now, the balance you're trying to strike there is that on the one hand, you've got the issue of trying to break down excess mucus, which is the problem with chronic bronchitis, which is what the saline will do, and you're hoping that you don't absorb too much saline, too much salt. The difficulty is that people with this will often have other underlying conditions, and almost invariably you'll find that the individual who has chronic bronchitis will almost invariably have an underlying heart condition as well. They'll have this condition that's badly named congestive cardiac failure or heart failure. It's not that the heart is failing, it's just that it's not working as effectively as a pump. And that in turn is one of the main reasons why we see people getting a retention of fluid and swollen ankles as a consequence. Best thing to do in this case is return to the specialist who would have advised this in the first place, and get their advice as to what needs to be done. And it's probably taking a bigger picture view on this. In other words, rather than focusing just on the lungs alone, it's actually looking at the whole person and seeing what can be helped to try to alleviate this uncomfortable symptom.
Now, next up, we have a listener who's very concerned about her 52-year-old sister who has Down syndrome. She says she's always been quite large around her bottom belly and thighs, but recently she's put on more weight. And is now over 15 stone. I'm very worried about her. She can't exercise. Now, she says her diet is very good, but I feel that she probably meant to say her diet isn't very good.
Yeah, and there's a huge problem there. You see, the difficulty is that for individuals who do have Down syndrome, because of what's happened in terms of their genetics, it does mean that later in life, and unfortunately for a lot of them, later in life means in their 50s and 60s, they will run into other health problems. And this is part of a bigger picture where we need to be looking more closely at what we do for people with all sorts of disabilities and inabilities and so on. Coming back to this lady's sister, it may very well be that there would be an argument here to be made. You see, part of the difficulty is how do you regulate somebody's diet? it's vastly easier said than done, and particularly for somebody who's got Down's, it may be that there is issues then in terms of being able to rationalise why it would be important to try to regulate the diet. A really difficult problem. Start with your own GP. I don't want to be prescriptive about this one. My sense is that there is a change coming in terms of how we manage and how we help rather people who have issues with their weight. And it's not just about using the so-called skinny jabs. Let's put that out there straight away. But I think there are other options becoming available and will become available over the next couple of years that might help to reduce people's urge to eat. Let's put it that way.
All right. We'll finish with this one from a Killarney caller, Eamon. And, you know, I always wanted to know this as well. This person simply asked, what causes a hernia? Is a hernia?
Okay. A hernia is, or a herniation is where some part of the body pushes through into another part of the body or outside the body. So the classic ones are the so-called inguinal hernias. And the inguinal hernia are swellings that usually men, but also women occasionally, will get at the lower part of the abdomen. And you'll find that you get the soft, squashy swelling that comes out. Now, you can get hernias in other places. You can get them along the midline above and below the belly button. You can get them around the belly button itself. You can get it happening inside in the abdomen where the stomach herniates up around into the esophagus. The problem, it's a mechanical problem. What's happening is that layers of tissue that are supposed to hold whatever it is, say for example, it's supposed to hold the gut back, becomes not so much torn, becomes weaker, so as that the bowel, for example, can push through, or the jargon is, or the verb is, it herniates through into the, so the classic one is you've got a man with an inguinal hernia down the bottom of the groin on either side, it herniates through, the bowel pushes through and eventually ends up going down into the top of the scrotum. Now, it's a mechanical problem and therefore the answer is a mechanical solution. So it's a small operation to tie off the hole and that's it.
Yeah, and can you actually see something protruding under
the skin? Absolutely.
Yeah.
The man or the woman, depending, will come in and say, I found a lump. And you put your hand in, you feel it soft and squashy. Now, in the majority of cases, the lump can be what we call reduced. You can actually push it back, put a bit of gentle pressure and it will go back. But of course, as soon as you stand up, it'll pop back out again. The one we do concern about is the so-called incarcerated hernias or strangulated hernias. And what that is that where part of the bowel comes out, but the opening through which it's coming out is relatively narrow, so as that it, as it pushes out, the blood supply to that part of the heart of the gut gets cut off, and that part of the gut then dies off. It just dies, and that is a very dangerous, though extremely rare, phenomenon. And that person will require emergency surgery to remove this part of the bowel, which becomes gangrenous in very short order. Anyway, long story short, hernias are where some part of the body pushes through to another part of the body is due to a weakness in a wall or a layer in between, and the treatment is tied up surgically.
Okay, well, that explains it all in plain man's English, as they say.
Yes, I can,
yeah. Eamon, thank you very much for that. We better let you go and we will see you again and chat to you again next week. And thank you to everybody for sending in those medical